Laughlin says, right now it's not an issue because we are not going to be using dispersant.
No answer.
Oh, listen, it's been answered. I'll let Don answer.
It's an Exxon manufactured chemical called Corexit 9527.
Mr. Stevens, since your company has assured us that you did your best, you do not accept any grave criticisms of your methods, and since you said it's very difficult and very slow, and you said that the weather didn't cooperate, isn't the inevitable conclusion, therefore, that in incidents like this, there's very little that oil companies can do, and therefore a whole consideration is needed about this kind of delivery of oil, especially in view of the Anwar plans to put its oil through the Alaska pipeline?
Through a whole chain of premises to that question that I don't agree with. And by the time you got there, I had lost track of the question. It was more in the form of a speech. If you would, ask the question.
I was, in fact, quoting back to you the points that have been made to us in the last 3 or 4 days about the fine performance of your company. Comments that you've just...
Well, let me say one thing. Well, I never said, never intended to say, that we didn't accept criticism, and I never said, and I don't intend to say, that we never make mistakes. Well, obviously, that would be foolish on my part.
Various criticisms.
So, again, what was the question?
Well, various criticisms have been made, have been rebutted by your corporation. And I'm saying, and you reiterate that you have done, in fact, the best job that it was possible to do, given that point.
No, I was asked for my view of our performance, and I gave my view. I didn't say that there wasn't room for criticism or that other people hadn't criticized and that we wouldn't accept that. But again, the question I asked was not the one you referenced.
You have done pretty much as best a job as could have been done, and the oil is still here and very little has been removed. Doesn't that give us cause for reconsideration of the entire process?
Well, Frank, you said this morning when I arrived, welcome to day 6. Would you expect, with a spill of this magnitude, day 6 to have completely handled the whole matter? Anywhere in the world, any situation, it's going to take a little while to handle the problem, but again, one of my purposes is to assure that we will. Yes.
Given what's occurred here, I don't think it can be seen as anything but an indictment of the oil company's ability to handle a case like this. So given that, I think the burden of proof is upon you to prove to the American public that you deserve to be able to operate in a place like this. So what specifically do you plan to do for the future to assure that and to give that confidence?
Well, I think I've already commented on that in a couple of respects. One, we will make every attempt to assure that we benefit from the lessons of this incident. We'll continue to work to improve our base business. Again, I caught that record in terms of steady improvement.
But specifically with regard to places like Bristol Bay, offshore California coast, in vacuum.
Well, again, I can't comment on a specific. I can comment on the generality. There are too many specifics with regard to a specific for me to comment. Yes.
How many oil spill experts does Exxon have on its payroll?
We have. The question is pretty fuzzy as to what an expert is. Probably be well if you define what you mean by an expert in what phase, I mean, in dispersant.
Well, why would you have an expert on your staff? Let's start with that.
We have the Exxon response team in the organization that is outlined for that response numbers about 50 positions.
Now, is that before the spill?
I'm talking about, yes, we have for the past 10 years have had in place a response organization. That response organization has about 50 positions in it, and we have basically 3 people for each of those positions to allow us to be able to respond even though people may be on vacation or out. And what we do, we also have to provide for relief. Now, of those, in all of those 50 positions, we have people trained to do certain functions. Some are in logistics, some are in beach cleanup, some are in dispersant, some are in mechanical cleanup. Now, those people are trained, in all of those positions. So I would call them, in my definition, they are experts in that piece of it. Now, what we also have on call to us is a number of non-Exxon experts that we can mobilize very quickly. And that's a large portion of the 96 non-Exxon people that we have contracted to us working out of that response center. That organization that we put in place starting Friday night goes back to a lot of study and preparation conceptually, organizationally, it started about 10 years ago.
Richard, Goldrock reporting that 4 and 5 years ago, 9 experts left. They were offered early retirement. Is that correct?
Well, I couldn't comment, but you know, we started 10 years ago. I can't count them. I don't know that. We started 10 years ago. Now let me finish. We started 10 years ago. 10 years ago, we identified these experts. Now, right now, all those people that we put in place are 10 years older than when we first identified them. I imagine that, or certainly, when we identified them 10 years ago, they were very experienced people. They were the best we can get our hands on. I imagine that a certain percentage of them were 50 years plus at the time we identified them and are now 60 years plus and just retired. So if a certain amount of people retired, I would say that's probably not true.
Let me just make one additional comment to that. The numbers of people and sort of planning, if you will, contingency plan in terms of people and expertise, he was quoting his company-wide, not just shipping, and these are interfunctional, that is, from various branches of our company. And of course, in specialty areas, we have call on our research companies, which have a good deal of expertise in some of the narrow areas having to do with fate and effects of oil and water and so on as well.
There's one other point we ought to add, too. When someone takes early retirement who is an expert, he then becomes a consultant, and we hire him anyway. And we have some of those up here.
Were those 9 who left 4 years ago, were they replaced? Or were those positions dropped?
They were replaced as they were needed. You know, when you downsize an organization, you don't replace a number for number.
Yes, they were replaced. Dr. Lindblom is one of those gentlemen who retired. He was in the first group that returned. So we did not lose expertise that was not replaced. That team was up and running and never was not up and running. Yes, ma'am. I recognize you from day one.
We're charter boat operators in Prince William Sound. We've been very concerned about Prince William Sound and what's happening. And I do want to thank you for your patience with all of us. But I have some questions. And the gentleman to my right has questions afterwards.
Yes.
I've got the contingency plan. And looking at your contingency for this spill-up,
My contingency plan, Exxon Shipping, is 3 binders this thick.
All right. Spill cleanup on shorelines. We're, of course, particularly concerned about shorelines.
Yes.
We're intimately familiar with shorelines because that might imply we went aground on them. We have not gone aground on any shorelines. We walk on the shorelines. Your contingency plan says most shoreline and beach areas should not require extensive cleanup unless there is a large volume of oil present in the area, a sensitive area is significantly affected, the economics or aesthetics of a place of residence, scenic beauty, or study area is affected, it acts as a source of continuing contamination. The decision to clean up a contaminated shoreline will be made by the terminal superintendent after consultation with the environmental supervisor, restoration supervisor, and appropriate advisors and government agencies. I'd like to know who's included in the appropriate advisors and if members of the charter boat industry and tourism industry, recreation industry could be included in that. And from our perspective, all of Prince William Sound is of unsurpassed scenic beauty.
I recognize
you have an incredibly difficult problem cleaning up the beaches.
The statement you read is for those spills, I'm sure it was minor spills, that are under Alyeska's control. Right now, this is under Exxon Shipping Company control. We intend to leave this place as close to what it was when the incident started.
We are not going to spare any effort to clean up, and we are not going to identify any areas that aren't going to be cleaned up. You have my word for that. We are going to be here a long time. We're digging in. The cleanup is going to take a long time, and we're going
to
do it.
We appreciate that, but we also want to make sure that in the process of cleaning up, more damage is not done. We are very concerned about
it's
on the Chugach National Forest with sewage and garbage and human traffic on a very fragile ecosystem on shore.
Yes, and we
hope that they will be housed on boats or ships.
We have encountered certainly that concern with the state agencies that we are working with. We are now planning for the beach cleanup. We just can't go in there. I know everyone in the press would like pictures of 100 people on the beach with shovels. That's not the way it's going to happen. In fact, you can probably stay through all the rest of this week. You won't see it happen. It's going to be a very carefully planned activity. The state agencies will be playing the major role in deciding where we site, how we site, how we address each specific beach area, each specific inlet. We may be allowed to do some things in one area that we wouldn't dare do in others. So just the siting alone of where we put a base camp, I think, is going to take days. And the reason it is not because we don't want to do it sooner, but because of the sensitivity that this lady explained. We're going to do this thing very, very carefully. It's going to be very, very well coordinated with the state agencies. We have that organization in place through this, the three-member steering committee and the operations coordination group, and those discussions of how we site, how we clean, where we go are already underway. It's going to be done very, very carefully.
Appreciate that very much.
Okay, thank you. Yes.
Mr. Arlossi, thank you. There's a gentleman to my left with one more question here. You. Your spokesman, we work together here. Your spokesman, Mr. Cornett, used a figure of 240,000 barrels spilled in this spill for several days now. He mentioned this morning, or made reference to that, the fact that indeed, as long as this ship is grounded on this reef, oil is leaking out of it.
No.
And at this moment, oil is still coming out of it. Doesn't that mean that our $240,000 figure is archaic at this point?
No, not at all.
Not at all.
We have a boom around the ship. We have one, and I believe perhaps two skimmers there, but the release from the ship has been almost insignificant. And in fact, it may be oil still entrapped under the hull. Maybe it's not 240,000, maybe it's 243,000. But if your question is an implication that it's now 500,000 or 400,000 or 300,000, it's absolutely not the case. Yes.
I'm not really speaking for myself here, but for probably a good portion of the people that are here in the room, I'm sure everyone would like to hear from you if you have an opinion or an idea, or possibly a thought, on whether or not your company will endorse a priority local hire of Alaskans that would like to help you clean this mess up.
Yeah!
We have been in that mode since about day two or three.
Yeah, I understand you have the magnitude of your problem is overwhelming. I feel bad for you in that area. However, there are a lot of naturally concerned local and statewide concern about this. There are people that are being brought in a technical advisory capacity, I'm sure, that can't be brought from anywhere else. But as you see by the concerned faces here that you have in front of you, there is a very large number of people that would be real happy to roll up their sleeves and go to work with you. We understand the logistics of making a tactful approach and not having to try to lift the same load twice. I think that if you people had any kind of a statement or policy that would let these other people feel a little better about being Alaskans, that they'd sure be glad to get in there and help you.
As I landed at the Anchorage Airport last night and drove into the hotel quite late, the tail end of the Cordova town meeting was going on, and I was struck, perhaps touched, by people's desire to want to help, people's desire to want to do something. The short answer to your question is yes, we do.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to ask a question. You mentioned early that you wanted to look beyond this incident to, with respect to our energy resources, to continue improving our standard of living. And the question I have has to do with our standard of living on the planet and Exxon's responsibility toward the effect of oil on the planet Earth with regard to global warming. What is your responsibility, and what responsibility are you taking for looking to alternative sources of energy and ways to get off of the oil, I guess, fix that this nation is on? I realize that you're a profit-making company, and I realize that your product is oil, but what responsibility do you have towards improving the standard of living when everything that oil does is taking away from our standard of living, which is our quality of life?
Well, of course, there are some of these impacts of energy use that, at this point in time, I think there's still a large number of questions as to exactly why some of the trends you mentioned are occurring, or just what the meaning of them is. But let me reply more broadly, if I might. The company, me, the other employees of Exxon are citizens here, and we value pristine environments every bit as much as Alaskans. We may not have quite the beauty you have in the coastal area of Texas, but where it comes to assuring that as a responsible corporate citizen, we are conducting ourselves in a way so as to not present a conflict between the environment, again, the place where we all live, and our nation's need for energy, that's an area where we spend a good deal of time and work hard in, and I'm satisfied that we'll continue, not we as a company, but we as a nation, to find ways to make those trade-offs in a responsible fashion without having to sacrifice either.
Mr. Stevens, one question about that.
Yes, you've been very patient.
Earlier we were talking about dispersants, and Mr. Yarassi, I believe, said that the decision to use dispersants, or at least the idea of using dispersants right now, seemed to be a dead issue. But you were leaving that open for possible use with any more leaking oil that might come out of the tanker. Has your decision at this point not to use any more dispersants have anything to do with any of your previous test results or uses?
No, none at all. Quite the contrary. My understanding, without being a dispersant, not person, expert, is that all of the tests, the understanding of the impact of dispersants in water, so forth and so on, are several years old. I mean, they're not of recent vintage, and the tests that have been done more recently just look at the effect on this spill, not in terms of the effect of dispersants. So no, it's just purely and simply, I think Frank explained it quite well, the situation with respect to the oil itself, i.e. it's in a stable emulsion, and dispersants don't help.
The decision to not move any further with dispersant was one that I took at noon today. Remember, I said we had initiated that request at 9 o'clock last night. By noon today, I felt that we had sufficiently lost that window, that dispersant had such a low chance of being successful on that, what we now have, very highly emulsified oily water mixture, that it was not, it made no sense to continue to press and have people discuss it. At this point, it's a non-issue on the old oil.
But have you had any problems with trying to use it on this spill up to today, and
we have a very
So no, it's just purely and simply, I think Frank explained it quite well, the situation with respect to the oil itself, i.e. it's in a stable emulsion, and dispersants don't help.
The decision to not move any further with dispersant was one that I took at noon today. Remember, I said we had initiated that request at 9 o'clock last night. By noon today, I felt that we had sufficiently lost that window, that dispersant had such a low chance of being successful on that, what we now have, very highly emulsified oily water mixture, that it was not, it made no sense to continue to press and have people discuss it. At this point, it's a non-issue on the old oil.
But have you had any problems with trying to use it on this spill up to today? And have that has
we had a very effective test Saturday night, and we had a spectacular test early Sunday afternoon, and you know, we have videos of that.
Right. I'm not real sure I understand the thrust of your question, but if it is, have we seen something or learned something through the tests that have been performed that give us any additional information, pause for concern about the impact on the environment? The answer is no. That's the thrust of your question.
We're going to take five more questions.
I had a question here. This young lady here.
Thank you. First of all, how do you spell your name? I have a question.
STV.
STV, okay. Can you tell us anything about the current size of the spill, how far it's traveled? And secondly, can you tell us the location of your burn attempt today, how big it was, and what you might, where and when you might be attempting further burns? That's a two-part question, the size of the spill and burns, today and future.
Well, the area that it encompasses, we've shown it on a map. I don't have a square mile figure, but it's at the northern end of Night Island, and then with some significant moose coming down in the channel to the to the east of Night Island, and the west of Green Island, and that's you know, it's a sizable area. I don't have an estimate of it right now. Yes, that was the hand result on a nautical chart of the surveying that was done this afternoon by Dr. Goodman, who, by the way, is an Exxon expert. We had one burn to the northwest of Night Island this morning that was not successful, and I don't know the site that they're setting up for their new burn.
Okay. Mr. Stevens, when you met with the Bush administration officials today, were there discussions regarding the possible federal takeover of the spill? Did they ask you if you thought there would be anything to gain from that? And did you have to defend Exxon's continued role as the leader in the cleanup as opposed to a federal takeover?
Let me, as a postscript, just add that Senator Frank Murkowski was with that group today, so it was beyond, you know, just the three principals from Washington. Again, I described the discussion that we participated in as a fact-finding tour, pardon me, a fact-finding session. Information requested and provided. I did not feel it necessary to defend anything, but rather simply to be sure that they had the facts, and that was where the matter was left.
I think that perhaps it's time now, in light of what's happened, for you to take a leading role in trying to get a pipeline down the West Coast once again, rather than continuing to tank oil down the coast?
Well, of course, that question was looked at very deeply and debated some length a number of years ago, and with the existing infrastructure in, and again, there were trade-offs that had to be made in order to do that. With the existing infrastructure, my own view would be that that has less merit today even than it did originally.
Why is
it,
that?
Yes.
In lieu of what you now know, at least what has been reported thus far, your captain on this ship was filing at the time that he had a suspended driver's license from DWI. The National Transportation Safety Board said today that when the Coast Guard boarded your ship, they found they detected alcohol in the breath of this captain. Do you anticipate any changes in the screening of your skippers and your crew members, any changes in policy, or is it not unusual for a person with a DWI to be commanding an oil tanker?
The first part of your question presupposes that we had some information that we didn't, and in fact, all I know about the question of driver's license is I've read in the newspaper. The second part of your question delves into an area that is currently the subject of an investigation, which has both civil and criminal penalties involved for the individuals. And it would be totally inappropriate for me to make any comment about the individuals in any way. But, and I appreciate the question, because I want to move beyond to what really is, I think, at the heart of his question. Exxon has had for a number of years, and I was talking to one of our senior captains this afternoon, a policy completely prohibiting the possession and use of alcohol, and of course more recently drugs, on any of our premises. And of certainly with respect to any individual reporting for work wherever he works, he or she works, in an unfit way. We totally revamped our drug and alcohol policy in early 1987. Within the limits of current law, we communicated that to every employee in our company. We followed through with extensive training of our supervisors and managers to assure full understanding by those key people of their role in implementing that policy. And about a year and a half, year and a quarter, middle of 1988, we followed up with a review of our effectiveness under that policy and assured ourselves that it was being followed and practiced in all of our units. My feeling is that we have done everything that we know how to do to assure that we meet our responsibilities to our employees for a safe working environment, and that we meet our responsibilities to the public at large to ensure that their interest, your interest, are protected because of the potential from substance abuse, drugs and alcohol. And I can assure you that this is something that we feel very strongly about, and will continue to assure that our practices are sound and effective. One last question. Yes.
So in San Francisco, be allowed to deballast in the Sound like the Baton Rouge was?
No, she deballasted at the terminal. She still has a slight amount of ballast on board, and that will stay on board when she leaves. San Francisco has not deballasted into the Sound or anywhere except the terminal.
Same for the Baytown.
What are you hoping to do to take a more timely response to the future for this sort of events? I haven't heard any specific details of that effect.
We said one more question. If we start down that path, we're going to be unfair to someone. Appreciate your interest, time you spent with us. The group will be back tomorrow morning at 11, and you can follow up. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was the president of Exxon USA, Bill Stevens, who has arrived on the scene and was one of the principal speakers this evening. The press conference started tonight with introductions by Don Cornett, who's been most active spokesman of the Exxon group. He introduced Bill Stevens, the president of Exxon, and Pete LaFard, the president of Vico, who, however, did not take part, as it turned out, in the press conference. The initial presentation was by President of Exxon, Bill Stevens, and he basically talked about the regrets that the company has over the incident, and indicated that he did not come to replace the Exxon management on scene, but simply to work with them to make sure that the company was doing everything in its power to provide the support needed in the Valdez location. His comment was, we sent our best. He did make a justification of the industry's record, citing that 8,700 Exxon sailings had occurred through Valdez in the last 12 years, 6.6 billion barrels of oil transported, and this citing this as the first major incident.
Were you just standing?
Frank Irossi was next on the podium and gave a brief summary of activity today. The Exxon response team is up to 160 members. That's the Exxon employees and their consultants. Additionally, there are some 350 or so work and boat crews under contract or hired by contractors. That's for a total of about 500 involved on the Exxon payroll and the response effort. There was quite a bit of praise by Frank Irossi of the worker dedication, given the conditions that have prevailed often at night in Prince William Sound and the windy conditions, descriptions of freezing spray on the vessel, and of course the concern of the crews on the vessel, working on a vessel that is hung up on a reef and in some structural peril. Probably that particular praise is justified. There were the announcement that 450,000 barrels of oil have been removed from the stricken Exxon Valdez. Now that's almost half of the oil estimated to have remained on board following the grounding and the initial spill. With the pumps on board that have been brought on board, the submersible pumps, the rate of transfer to the Exxon Baton Rouge is now 8,000 barrels per hour. With 450,000 barrels transferred, the Exxon Baton Rouge is full. The Exxon San Francisco will be moving into location alongside to pick up the lightering by tomorrow morning. In response to a question asked at the conference, unlike the Exxon Baton Rouge, which appeared in the middle of the crisis, the Exxon San Francisco did its deballasting, the dumping of the oily ballast water at the Valdez terminal to be processed with a ballast water treatment system, and did not deballast in Prince William Sound. There were a number of questions hurled at the Exxon delegation. It's hard to keep track of those. The other remaining comments, either in the initial presentations or in response to questions, from Don Cornett, the announcement that no dispersants were applied today and that the concentration will be a tidal zone cleanup on Naked Island, Eleanor Island, Ingot Island, Knight Island, and Bly Island. They will, however, attempt additional burning, although yesterday's attempt was indeed a failure. Frank Irossi announced that there will be no more dispersant used on the oil that is currently in the water, although the dispersant delivery planes are being held in readiness and a supply of dispersant is being maintained in the case of additional oil being released from the stricken Exxon Valdez. Irossi said that he made the decision at noon today. It was his decision not to attempt to apply any more dispersant because it's been too late. The oil has been too long in the water for the dispersant to be effective. Finally, or almost finally, I should say, Bill Stevens, the president of Exxon, indicated that in his conversations with Senator Frank Murkowski, Alaska's junior senator, who had accompanied the Transportation Secretary Skinner and Admiral Yost, Commandant of the Coast Guard, and the head of the EPA. Stevens says he personally assured Senator Murkowski that when Exxon finished cleaning up, Murkowski would approve of the work that was done. The other two notes I have, or actually three quick messages. Don Cornett of Exxon indicated that there are evidently some people taking advantage of the situation in the community, going up to businesses, claiming to be Exxon personnel, charging things at businesses and saying no PO is necessary. He cautioned local merchants to ensure that representative of Exxon are in fact that. Also, there was evidently some call over statewide radio today by a legislator talking about Exxon needing 1,000 workers. Apparently, state job service offices around the state are receiving quite a hit from that. He says, right now, we have more people on hand than we know what to do with. Because of the environmental sensitivity of the beaches and areas where oil is going on shore on the islands, the cleanup effort will be a slow one and will be carefully planned and staged. And we were told several times tonight we will not see crews on the beaches on any large scale for days. Simply getting state approval of sites for base camps may take several days. Finally, in the Valdez area, a claim office has been set up. The number for claims is 835 5046. 5046. And that about wraps up my summary of the meeting. This was the most heavily attended meeting of the series of conferences and briefing that have occurred in Valdez since Friday, the day of the grounding of the Exxon Valdez tanker. The room was quite full, probably 200, 250 people here, many of them evidently workers or laborers who, union members who are awaiting a call out or awaiting a hiring to go to work on the spill. The press corps has grown and is getting, in some instances, more aggressive about pursuing their questions. Also, there is quite an environmental community, the people who were involved in the press conference at noon today. So the group of people who are present at these conferences is ever-changing. In fact, there were some comment today by one of the speakers, Frank Arasi, about having recognized someone from day one. We are now concluding day six of the Exxon Valdez incident, and tomorrow will be 1 week of since the tanker went aground. That is the last conference scheduled for today. Tomorrow we expect Exxon to be back at 11 a.m. with their morning briefing. Tomorrow evening, NOAA has a conference scheduled at 8 p.m., and any other conferences, briefings, or announcements that are made throughout the day, KCHU will attempt to bring them to you. Through the facilities of the Alaska Public Radio Network, KCHU has been able to begin assembling a team of its own, and we hope to be able to get some reporters out into the field, into the areas of Prince William Sound, where the work and the scene is now shifting. We'll keep you informed as we are able to get people out into the field. We, of course, will continue to cover all of the conferences and briefings live as they occur in Valdez. I want to thank KCHU staffer Laura Lee and our volunteers, Jeannie Passon, Hedy Sarney, for their assistance. Jeff Brown is engineering this broadcast back at the KCHU studios. I'm Dave Hammack, and this is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.